The regular season is heating up, new stars are emerging, and that means more opportunities to win up to 25 times your cash on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection on a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. Let it fly to turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Watch your favorite players and get paid doing it this basketball season. See your entries make progress during the game or make new entries for the second half and the fourth quarter. Three-pointers, assists, rebounds, and everything in between are yours for the taking. Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit of up to $100. Just download the Prize Picks app and use code GET100. That's code GET100 on Prize Picks for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
I think we've used the word stunning before upon opening a show and hearing something amazing, probably an isolated track or something. But when we sat there watching this together for the first time, and just from the opening, that very opening second of Real Love when it came on, not knowing what to expect,
right,
and immediately our ears recognizing, holy cow, this is different.
Completely different. I mean, it really jumps that intro now with the keyboard.
Yes. And not only did you get that great opening that's different from what we're used to, and then as the song proceeded, we're hearing different guitar fills from George.
Yeah.
But just, you no longer got that mix that we got in 1995 where every time John sings, there's that that comes up in it,
yes,
the tape hiss.
Yes.
It's so now fully integrated into the track.
Yeah, they've pulled back his vocal into the mix and blended it more with the Paul and George harmonies.
Now, it's a variance on the song. It's like an alternate mix, which is exactly what it is. But,
yeah,
I mean, to people that are accustomed to that 1995 Real Love mix, hearing this, I don't know if they're going to view this as a substitution, as an improvement, like, yeah, this is the go-to version now, because so much about it is good. But when you threw in those alternate lead parts, it's almost like, well, this isn't really the version. It's a nice alternative version.
It is. I personally, those guitar fills that they've taken, it's almost like demonstrating why they didn't use those, because they're not as strong, I don't think, as the version that was released in 95.
They're different, and they sound to me like he hadn't, like, perfected them yet.
Right.
That they're sort of like him trying out some ideas.
Yes, exactly.
So in a way, it's sort of a shame that they didn't keep the finished ones along with all the improvements that they made.
Right.
Because that would make it the go-to version.
Well, I'm sure some people, including Al, producer will find ways of, you know, blending the new mix with the old and optimizing.
And the other thing too is that one of the big raps on that song was always the fact that they sped it up a half tone or whatever it was.
Right.
And now they've brought it back to a natural sounding pitch. Don't you think?
I don't think so, actually.
That's how we both reacted to it.
We did react that way, but when I listened and A-B'd it, I don't think they've done anything there. I think they've pulled the vocal back.
So why does it? Well, there's ways of you can.
It just doesn't stick out as much.
You can keep the tempo the same, but reduce the pitch, as we've done on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
With when we did, what was it? Help.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So it didn't strike me as being as chipmunky as it once had been.
I think it's because it doesn't stand out as much. It's much more upfront, the Lennon vocal, in the original mix. And here it's blended, so it just doesn't, you know, that whole cassette phoned in tinny sound.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely gone.
It's certainly been diminished quite greatly.
As much as it can.
But I was disappointed that they didn't pitch shift it still.
Well, let's hear them side by side, just to do a little test for
with the intro. Let's hear also that intro.
Okay. Still think that's the same?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to really.
What do you think, listeners? Send us your responses on Facebook. One we are in clear agreement on is Please Please Me.
Oh yeah, that again jumped out, but for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, and I get what they were going for in terms of getting the key the same on the record, and the Beatles apparently. And I noticed this through some of the other performances on Ed Sullivan that they seem to be downtuning a little bit. Please Please Me, what, E flat?
Yes.
On Ed Sullivan, and the actual record is E.
Yeah, so they basically sped it up But that's, for me, a really dodgy decision. I don't know why, because it's got a kind of chipmunk effect now.
It does. It sounds too high and too fast. And the fact is, we do have the technology to keep the tempo to match the action,
yeah,
but raise the pitch.
Yeah.
Or you know, they were trying to raise the overall key back to E, but make it not sound so unnatural.
I know. And I mean, of course, what that plays into is John's griping in 1970 about how when they played live, they often just sped things up, you know.
He was saying in the context of when it was becoming a grind just
yes.
to get the show done.
Yeah.
You know, they normally clocked out at around a half an hour, but if they were, you know, wanting to get the hell out of there,
right.
they'd knock it down to 25 minutes
yeah.
or something.
Yeah, so this sounds as if, like, you know, on their Sullivan performance, which is actually their first one, of course.
Yeah, the live
was broadcast
one.
As the third.
Right, this was you're right, it was the... It was like a sound check, basically. It was a dress performance.
Yeah, well, it was a different audience.
It was filmed.
Right. Yeah, they shipped in one
earlier
audience.
Before the actual live 73 million people one.
Correct.
Yeah,
and you know, here they've sped it up. That to me is possibly, you know, the biggest gripes I've got about this whole collection,
yes.
the video collection, which is what we're discussing today. Of course, the OnePlus
Beatles One
video.
Plus, which
yeah.
Released November 6th, and yeah. we've had a chance to digest it, and
yeah.
now we're going to offer our invaluable input on the whole thing.
There
this
you go.
Is Robert.
And this is Richard. I actually think it's wonderful. I'll say that up front. I think they've done a fine job. You know, so where we're picking some holes here, you know, these are like really slim pickings in terms of
We're pointing
criticisms.
Out some things. It's not, I mean, on the whole, you know, this is absolutely a 10.
Yeah.
It's stellar. You know, it's Beatle fan tradition to gripe and pick apart every single thing.
Yeah.
And not for no reason, because a lot of the releases have, in some ways, you know, fallen short of what they could have been.
Yes.
And this certainly has aspects of that, which
mm-hmm.
we'll get to.
Mm-hmm.
But on the whole, everything I think they set out to do in terms of remixing the audio for the CD, tweaking it for the video, and the remastering and restoration of these films has been just stellar.
Yeah. The worst aspect of it, without a doubt, the contributions of Paul and Ringo.
Yes, ironically.
Which are, quite honestly, I think quite shameful. You know, that it looks as if, you know, the guys from Apple have sort of, you know, said, we would like your contribution here.
Okay, you've got 20 minutes.
Yeah, really. That's what it looks like. It's like, yeah, he said 20 minutes or an hour, you've got an hour or something. We've only got them talking about a few tracks. Paul is audio only.
Yes, as if he's commenting for any blind viewers that might be out there.
Mm-hmm.
He is literally describing the visuals as they unfold.
Yeah, it's a bit like Roy Kinnear in Help. You know, I'm putting my right foot in front of my left.
Exactly.
It's like, do we really need a play-by-play from Paul?
And
oh,
only
look,
at
here
one
we are
point
on a white
does
horse.
He inject like an anecdote in that you would be expecting. It's like you would think that attaching so much importance to this project, as they clearly did, and all the care they put into it, that it would have occurred to somebody along the line to bring in some kind of Beatle expert, whoever it would be, that has the familiarity with these promo films that clearly Paul and Ringo do not,
mm-hmm.
after decades, you know, probably since they had any real interaction with them, and come up with some questions, come up with something to prompt the stories. It's only during Hey Jude that suddenly Paul goes, you know, into this vignette about Billy, that,
yes.
that guy that...
The old guy, the
yeah.
street guy.
With
yeah.
a piece of cardboard,
yeah.
And that's something that would have been a lot more welcome in every of the three or four that he
yeah.
actually does this for.
And I mean, we got Ringo just sitting in front of his computer screen. It's like something, you know, someone's like filming him almost with a handheld camera or their iPhone.
And wasn't his sort of disposition interesting?
Strange.
Very strange.
You know, I was thinking, quite honestly, like, you know, he's been dry for many years, and I beginning to wonder, his demeanor had edge to it. He's smiling.
Almost a belligerence.
Yeah, he's smiling, but there's like an edge there.
It's barroom stuff.
Yeah.
That's when you're sitting with the loud guy at the bar,
mm.
you know, asserting himself. You know, I'm not making any accusations, but I was a little shocked because I've seen, you know, any number of interviews with Ringo in the past, you know, 30
yeah.
odd years since
yeah.
he dried out, and nowhere does he come off the way he does in these things.
No. The last time he came off that way was on his website telling people not to ask for autographs.
Well, I was thinking of the 1980 John Davidson show appearance.
Yeah.
You remember
yeah.
the infamous?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite that extreme, but judge for yourself, viewers.
Yeah. So that was really disappointing. It really is their own product,
mm-hmm.
and it's as if they're doing whoever a favor. you know, just to contribute something.
The equivalent of phoning it in.
Yeah, really, right. Really, really poor. The good side of it is you don't have to play that. It's an extra, mm-hmm. so it doesn't, you know, tarnish the finished product. It's just a pity. It could have been so much better.
Right. It is wonderful. You know, let me just enumerate the ways that I thought that they went beyond expectations, just beyond the sonic differences and the visuals that are so stunning. Mm. And when you see, there's like five different little mini documentaries on YouTube on the Beatles channel, like these behind the scenes thing.
Yes.
The one most striking is the one of the Royal Variety Show.
Oh, yeah. Well, they
terribly
get rid of the
damaged
tear.
That film was. Yeah.
They get rid of the tear in the film that's all over it.
Yeah.
It's and moving all over the place.
Right in the middle of the screen.
Yeah.
And they're describing how they're, you know, you have to fly in parts from other parts of the film and get the shadows right.
Yes.
I mean, unbelievable amount of work, just so painstaking.
Fantastic.
And it just, it just so pops.
I mean, I thought I work hard with my Photoshop, but, you know, fantastic technology as well, where they showed all the blemishes on a frame of film and how they sort of like click on all these blemishes and get rid of them. But they're going frame by frame.
Yeah. You know, and it really makes you grateful for the instances back in the day when the Beatles did take the care with whoever was working with them to shoot on, you know, 35mm.
Yeah,
film.
With some of the later videos, definitely.
Well, Rain and Paperback Writer.
Yeah.
You know, those still so pop and are so fresh.
They do.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pity that some of the other stuff that was just shot on videotape, you know, and they weren't thinking 50 years from now, we're going to repackage this and sell it to the fans that are out there. You know, they were thinking immediate purposing.
Mm.
So they didn't have that kind of foresight. But the instances where it just worked out that way, the results are stunning.
Right. Now, this is something that I've been asking for like 35 years, seriously, since the late 70s, early 80s, when I got my first Betamax Sony video recorder, which was like, you know, the size of, I don't know, a box of gold bars, and it weighed like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that time, I was getting sort of bootleg videos from the States often, you know, of the videos, and they were terrible quality. And so for years, I thought, you know, come on, Apple should put, you know, the Beatles should release the videos.
Yes.
And it's quite surprising to know what the attitude actually was, which learnt recently when I interviewed Eric Taros. Eric has been working on the Ron Howard movie.
The live documentary that is scheduled for release next year.
Absolutely. He was pulled in as an expert because he's got an absolutely phenomenal collection and knowledge of Beatles live performances, videos,
promo films,
all of that stuff. And so when I was in Boston recently, I actually caught up with Eric and he explained how this whole OnePlus video project came about.
The people running Apple now are truly interested in doing what the fans want to see. I think the number one video collection coming out is going to be a great example of that. And I really feel a lot of, I'm hoping that we help push that one to the fore because, you know, John McEwen, when I say we, I mean my friend John McEwen, great film collector. I sat with Jeff Jones and Jonathan Clyde and Aaron Bremner and I looked him in the eye and I talked to him and they're real people and there was no lawyers and there was no garbage there. It was the real guys. We're talking about a long-range plan, you know, like, well, you know, because we're sitting there working on the live project with them. But, you know, you can't be in that environment without sort of saying, you know, oh, God, you know, oh, my God, I'm here now. I have to give you this info burst. You know, these poor guys had to listen to us rattle on about this crap, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like they're so patient about it. That's the thing. They're just really nice guys. But we got into a discussion of, what would the fans like to see? And I said, well, you know, everyone wants to see the damn Shea Stadium thing done right. Let's do Shea Stadium. It's on the schedule, you know, and, you know, people want to see Let It Be, but we understand there's issues, there's this and that. And yeah, we know about that. We're working on it. But it might have been John McEwen or it might have been me. We said, well, what the hell happened with the promo films? And, you know, I hope Jeff Jones, if you're listening, you don't mind me saying this. I remember Jeff's look on his face was fairly incredulous. And he, in a very innocent way, said, well, who would be interested in that? And I said, are you joking?
Amazing.
And they just really didn't understand. You know, they figured, oh, it's been out there. It's on YouTube. And I said, yeah, but it's I said, do you realize what we go through? I said, you know, if a new piece floats in, 30 seconds of Strawberry Fields Forever, that looks better than that 30 seconds we've all seen, we'll Frankenstein that into a cut. You know, we all have Final Cut or Premiere. I have Premiere, Adobe. And, you know, and it gets recycled out there again. And the collectors will circulate, okay, this is the best version we have. I think they really listen to us. Because if you see the 5K scan they did of Strawberry Fields Forever, oh my God. I mean, this, I'm looking at the damn sky. This stuff going on in the sky I hadn't seen before. You know, look at that cloud. You know, oh, a typical Beatle nerd, right? So, but I mean, the thing I remember really emphasizing was, and you know, maybe some of your audience will be nodding their head in appreciation right now, I loved Paul McCartney's McCartney years, except that he tried to sometimes take things that were 4-3 perspective and make it 16:9. And, you know, I understand why people do that. It's like, okay, well, this is the modern format now. But I remember saying at the meeting, you know, treat the art with the respect. You know, I think people are sophisticated enough to understand that back in the day we had 4.3 perspective. And I said, don't cut off the tops and bottoms. So much cool shit going on in there. Uh-oh, bad word. There's so much cool stuff going on in the margins or whatever. You don't want to cut that off for the sake of widescreen or warping the image or all that stuff. And the attention to that I've seen so far is just astounding. They cleaned the stuff beautiful. I mean, it just, it's not like they slapped up the old film and just ran it off. It, boy, did they do a job. And on top of that, if that wasn't enough, the 5.1 remixes of the sound is just genius. So this is really like, crack open the beer and get the popcorn going, gang, because this is what you've always, I mean, this is, I can't wait. This is, I'm more excited about this than anything. And I think they've struck a good compromise in that, if you look back in Anthology, they had, you know, Strawberry Fields Forever, but they, you know, cut in some like home movie footage and stuff. I mean, they made basically a new video, which is fine, but that's not the definitive video.
Right.
I think what, in the case of Hey Jude or something, where you have the, you know, the distinctive versions, you know, there's one version where everything's really out of time. So I guess I take less offense at that, you know, a hybrid of the two. You know, in the perfect world, you would just pick one version and say, okay, this is it. I think where possible, they've done mostly that. I don't think there's been a lot of monkeying that I can see. You know, I have to really go back and look. And it's not like they've sent things, hey, Eric, have this, and have a look at it. It's just, I really, you know, I've heard what I've heard and I've seen what I've seen that basically most everybody else has as well, and maybe with a little bit more inside information. But I think they've tried really hard to just respect the original films. But you get a lot of repetition. I mean, you are going to get the best version ever of the Fish and Chips film.
Right.
I mean, I can't wait. I've had it for a million years, one of the Intertel promos where they're having lunch, you know, during I Feel Fine.
Which Epstein vetoed.
Yeah. Well, you know, Brian understood image control probably more than any person on Earth in his era. And now maybe he would have a different opinion. I really think he would be into the fun of it as opposed to this doesn't portray the, you know, the boys are eating. It's disgusting. You know, I mean, now we'd be like, hey, look, they have their fish and chips. You know, it's different, you know, different times, but that stuff is all fascinating now. And I mean, you can't show all of the Intertel promos because the whole idea behind doing the Intertel promos was the Beatles were tired of having to show up at Granada up in Manchester or whatever and just miming along to their record. So, hey, why don't we, when they were doing, the legend I've always heard, and, you know, Mark Lewison would know better than me, was that they were doing the Music of Lennon and McCartney show up in Manchester. I think it was in Manchester, they shot most of that.
Yeah,
and they shot, I know the Peter Sellers part was shot in London. But anyway, that, you know, they got this idea, why don't we just shoot a bunch of promos all at the same time, and so we can send a different one to Beat Club in Germany and a different one, you know, to here. And that's really where the video and modern video was probably born in many ways. So you can't, you know, can you really show all the paperback writers? You know, maybe not. There's like four of them, you know. They've picked the right ones. And some of them are on there as bonuses, you know. So there's always, you know, if you did every single promo and every variation, It would be, you know, I'd love it. It would be like a 5-disc set or something, and, you know, great. Where's the problem? But they do have to kind of aim for wow factor, and, you know, you get the right, you know, you get Chiswick Park Rain and Chiswick Park Paperback Writer.
Yeah.
Those are just... With Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane, those are my four favorite promotional videos ever made. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, those are the Holy Grail. Mm-hmm. You know, and to see them in this quality, it's just astounding.
Holy Grail, indeed.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? That Apple sitting on all this stuff and thought, no one will be interested.
They're always leaving money on the table. Hollywood Bowl,
yeah.
Christmas messages.
Yeah.
You know, and as the word has been for years, they had first, at least, if not enacted to the extent that they did for this release,
mm-hmm.
broached the idea to accompany Beatles 1
yeah.
back in 2000.
Yeah.
Which would have made absolute sense, just as Let It Be remastered on two DVDs would have made sense alongside Let It Be Naked when that
yes.
came out.
Yes.
But, you know, why do something all the way when you can do it by half measures?
Right, absolutely. But it's just that, to me, it's a no-brainer. It's so easy for them in
yes.
a way. I know they had to do a lot of work
yes.
restoring these videos, but they're just sitting on this stuff. And,
yes.
And they're thinking, oh, no one will be interested.
Really,
I mean, what's the precedent for no one being interested? They bought the one album, which
right.
had way less going for it to me than this video collection.
I have so many issues with that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, would you like to hear them?
Well, I know you've got a lot of issues generally.
But, I do.
You know, yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Well,
that's for
people.
Dr. Phil, not for this show.
My issue primarily with that is that if it was intended as a single disc, you know, if you're going to own one CD by the Beatles, this is the one to own.
Yeah.
It offers a warped perspective of their career.
Mm-hmm.
By using the arbitrary criteria of number one hit singles, you know, past a certain point, they weren't really a singles band.
Yeah.
They were a band that produced hit singles, but their heart and their artistry lay on the album length statement, at
mm-hmm.
least as far back as, you know, 66, although you can make the case for Rubber Soul as well.
Yes.
And by not offering some of their finest work as representation on that thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where is the, you know, apart from things that were so arbitrarily, that were singles that were left off, like Please Please Me and Strawberry Fields,
yeah.
you know, things like, you know, Here Comes the Sun, you know, Why My Guitar Gently Weeps, things like that, that were absolutely up there in terms of Beatles' greatest moments, unrepresented on this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, past a certain point, it's sort of the torch being passed from John to Paul
yes.
on the course of the CD.
Yes.
So to me, it's like, to anybody who's new to the table, to Beatle fandom, is it a place to start? Maybe. I mean, it's not the best place to start. They could have distilled the Red and the Blue albums down to 80 minutes.
Which is where you started.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. And then
yeah.
they could have called it the Green Album, because it surely would have done just as well as Beatles 1 in terms
of... clever, you see.
Yeah, see? Yeah. You got to think visual, Richard.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to this particular project.
Yes.
Some of the things that Eric was alluding to there, I mean, yeah, in the Rain video, we have an extra shot of George.
Yes. Yeah, I was noticing that when we were watching it together, because we've got these sort of memorized in our heads visually, and you could tell when different cuts were being inserted in.
Yes.
Kind of like during Anthology, when we'd be seeing familiar clips and performances, and all of a sudden alternate shots were being part of the edit.
Yeah. In Rain, the extra shot of George occurs after the line, "Everything's the same." And
okay.
there's also a
I'll
new
take your
shot.
Word for that.
Yeah, there's a new shot of the sky and the sun right near the beginning of the video. So, you know, minor things. On the Penny Lane video, there's also an extra shot of John riding the horse. That comes at the, I've been told, the 1:53 mark.
I've been told.
The part where it's singing about the fire engine. You know, and there's the extra shot of John. So they've tampered with things a little bit.
Yeah, you can see it in Revolution as well.
Yeah.
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 I don't have a problem with that. I'm not so much of a purist, like, oh my God, you can't.
Right.
You know, these are sacrosanct.
Yeah.
You know, I am all for remixing every damn album.
Yeah.
From the multi-tracks.
Right.
As you know.
Right.
So I don't have a problem with that at all.
Mm.
It would have been interesting if they had any footage of Ringo's horse running away.
Yeah.
Put that in there somewhere.
Well, being that Ringo was so expansive talking about it
right.
in the extras. Something else that Eric mentioned to me, which I was quite surprised about. We know that, for instance, with the BBC album, the Live at the BBC,
mm-hmm.
some of the recordings, you can even hear by the audio quality, fans taped off the radio
yes.
because, you know, the Beatles no longer had, you know,
well,
copies.
The BBC
of,
wasn't yeah. preserving these
right, right, right.
And they're with
so,
them.
But he said to me that he's got way better audio versions of their performances on The Sullivan Show, The Royal Variety Show. And this was people back in 63 and 64 who would have a good quality, you know, reel-to-reel recorder, a Grundig or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And they would actually take a feed direct off the TV, not putting the microphone there.
Right.
But actually, you know.
Yeah, through a cable.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. And he said, some of those are way better than what was coming off the TV.
Well, if he's working with Apple, why didn't he suggest that?
He absolutely did.
And I said, nah.
And he said that with From Me to You,
uh-huh.
He played them from the Royal Command performance.
Yeah.
He played them a better audio version, and they said, play that again. He said he played it for them four times, and for some reason, they never came back to him, and they went with the original. They
too
restored
good.
The
People
film.
Won't believe it.
Yeah.
Nope.
So
studio trickery.
Right. Now, on Drop-In, the Swedish show, which I think we have them singing She Loves You.
Yeah, She Loves You is part of this. Well, it's from Drop-In.
Right.
That was the same show that they also did I Saw Her Standing There
right.
and Long Tall Sally.
Right. And if you remember in that show, John's mic is kind of mixed way loud.
Well, his guitar is way loud. That chunka chunka rhythm.
Yes,
you don't even hear leads because
right.
it's so overdriven.
So Eric said that what they ended up doing was taking the performance of She Loves You from one of the Sullivan shows. I think it's from Miami Beach.
Okay.
And they
just four months later.
And yeah, you're right, really. But it was so similar, they flew that in.
And that's the kind of stuff I don't mind doing.
You're right.
You know, that's fine if you're not distracted when you're watching something by how awful the mixes are or, you know, the technical faults.
Right.
If it is, you know, more or less contemporaneous and they want to, you know, optimize it, I don't have any problem with that.
You know, they've got the technology now. They use Pro Tools and whatever plugins,
uh-huh.
you know.
As long as they're not auto-tuning the stuff, it's fine.
Correct. He said that they're going to be doing that also with the Ron Howard documentary. There's,
auto-tuning?
Well, you know, flying in different performances. So, for instance, with Tokyo, where you've got If I Needed Someone,
mm-hmm.
you know, they'll go for a better performance of that, a better audio performance.
Oh, probably
so
from
you've
Europe,
got
right?
a better vocal, better guitar sound, better harmonies.
Yeah, I'm sure better takes exist because Tokyo is so well recorded, you hear everything.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Stuff you don't want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was thinking the Munich shows were very well documented.
Yes.
There's probably some good audio
yes.
there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, okay, let's talk about some of what we thought were the high and low points of the video collection. In your case, what were the standouts for the right and wrong reasons?
I thought a tremendous standout for all the right reasons was, obviously, 8 Days a Week was a single in America, went to number one. There was no promo for it.
Yeah, it was so never a single in the UK.
Right, so they put together this promo for it for representation from the Shea Stadium footage.
Magnificent.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
The way I love that there are little bits all the way through where they sync up, you know, them
yeah,
singing.
Little bits of singing.
And it looks
yeah.
like they're singing that song.
Yeah, if you didn't know any better.
Right.
And not only did they use a pristine print of Shea Stadium, but they also, sonically, it started with a cold opening. It didn't fade up like
right.
the record does.
Right.
And there's that bit of tampering at the end that some people have taken exception to.
Yes.
I am not among them.
Well, I know that if you listen to the new stereo mix of 8 Days a Week, there are new elements in there that came from the multi-track that were mixed out in the first place or mixed down.
Yeah.
You know, you've got bongos, you hear more of the drums and bass.
More guitar.
More guitar. Yeah, then you can hear some acoustic, you can hear different electric guitar
yeah.
parts. And
which is what they should have done with Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
To make it the heavy metal record John has long promised.
Right, yeah. That would have been interesting. But I agree that 8 Days a Week, the new promo, is an absolute standout. I love the fact that they had quite a few shots of Brian in there.
Yes.
Whoever nice. Made, you know, that call got it right.
Tip of the hat to Vivek.
Well, maybe. Who knows?
Right.
But a superb job with that. I was really blown away, quite honestly, because a lot of those new videos that they did years ago, like Baby It's You, they were okay.
Yeah, they were okay.
But this was creative. A lot of quick cutting. And it gives it a
it
real pace
gives
and
energy. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what I thought was interesting is that there was not a director credit in the package.
I know.
Somebody put some thought into that.
Well, actually, it's another thing I have to be honest about with
the
package is the notes about the videos.
Sparse.
It's very. Inaccurate. You know, again, it gives us background information on the recording of the tracks in the studio, which must come from Lewison's books, you know, and then nothing really background information about the shooting of the videos, very little.
Or inaccurate.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, they talk about the paperback writer Rain promo and Paul's broken tooth.
Yeah.
And they sort of implied that he hadn't had time to get it fixed yet.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he only had about 4.5 months.
Yeah, but more than it was like Boxing Day 65 that happened.
Yeah.
And here it is, May 19th, May 20th.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of pictures taken in that span of time where his teeth look perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah.
I think we've come to the conclusion he pulled his crown off just to be different.
Yeah.
He knew what he was doing.
And we even thought that we saw one of the Abbey Road performances.
Yes. Where, it was there and then it wasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, uh-huh. Yeah. It's and that would be so Paul.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Barefoot, Mr. Out of Step.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of scene stealing never goes awry.
Yeah.
I love the bit at the end of the, I think it's the paperback writer video. Was it Rain?
Where closing the gate? Or you're talking about the split in the jacket?
That's right. They close the gate. And as he walks past, of course, there's a split in the vent of the jacket at the back revealing his butt.
Yeah. Right. Paul.
Yeah. So
in terms of things, did you have more to add in terms of things they got right or blew you away?
Well, I think they got it most of it right. As I said, we've been picking on some of the things they didn't get right, but in terms of the restoration, as Eric again was alluding to, just beautiful. You know, when I saw Penny Lane and it opens with John, which is a part of him walking down the King's Road in London.
Yeah.
So sharp. I'd never seen it in that resolution before.
Right.
Just fantastic. It just jumped.
If you don't think it's as good as it needs to be, it's because it can't be. I think they've done everything possible.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, keep in mind that the source materials, if the camera negatives even exist, you know, colors do fade and degrade over time.
Yeah.
I think they did a fabulous job of restoring everything to the extent that it fully could be.
Yeah, I have to say, and again, I don't blame them for this. They're working with what they've got.
Yes.
But something I was hoping would be sharper. I don't know if that was shot on 16mm.
It looks
but
like 16.
It's very grainy.
Yeah, and that's what they had.
I suppose one of these days they'll be able to improve that as well. But
make
right
a hologram
now,
out of it.
Well, yeah, that'll be the next stage.
Patty's still around.
I know. We'll be mixing with the Beatle wives and girlfriends. And,
yes.
Yeah. Okay, so
disappointments.
Go on. I think we both agree. And I think most people agree on the biggest disappointment in terms of the videos.
You know, funnily enough, I looked at some online chatter, and it's not universal. And maybe it's a demographic breakdown. Mm. Younger people of a certain age find it not as objectionable as we do. Mm. Come together.
Yeah.
Complete waste of 4 minutes.
Yeah, really. I mean, you know, creative, I suppose, but wait.
Well, first of all, it's 15 years old. It was done for the original release of Beatles 1. Mm. You know, it was considered, I guess, kind of cutting-edge animation at the time.
Yeah.
I think probably a lot of people that listen to our show have picked up a lot of gray area, if not black market releases through the years. And one of them was volume 1 and 2 of Beatles Chronology, the promo DVDs.
Yes.
There was a much better one representation for Come Together in there that was, granted, it was like 8mm home footage that people shot in the summer of 1969 outside EMI Studios at Abbey Road.
Yeah.
Much better fit for the song.
Yes.
You know, it's stuff like that. They could have taken footage from the summer of 69 and you know, worked in some of the stills, the outtakes from the Abbey Road cover shoot, the Tittenhurst shoot, something like that, and made a much more video, visually appropriate presentation of that song.
Yes, I totally agree. So that was just disappointing. I mean, what you said is right. Can you imagine if you had, you know, the footage of them arriving at the studio or leaving the studio?
Yeah.
All of that stuff. It'd be
fascinating. There's a bit of footage of them in the field with Martha taken that was an anthology. They could have worked, you know, they could have done all kinds of things.
Yeah.
It's a minor quibble. Also,
we're into minor quibbles, though, aren't we?
It's a way of life, Richard. The Yellow Submarine and Eleanor Rigby clips.
Yes.
I had no problem with Eleanor Rigby because as a freestanding video to the song in the Yellow Submarine film, I think it works. It's great.
Yep.
And it's groundbreaking visual stuff.
Yeah.
I thought using for the Yellow Submarine song just clips taken out of the movie, it's okay. I mean, it functions as sort of a 3-minute trailer for the film, but I think more could have been done.
Yep.
Again, I hearken back to the Beatles Chronology DVD for video representation.
Yes.
They took actual, like, home movie footage from 66 or so, as well as stuff from the Beatle cartoon, the TV thing, and they came up with something much more creative that I thought, you know, instead of saying, you know, everybody has seen Yellow Submarine to death with various, you know, remasterings every other year, you know, they could have come up with something entirely visually different that wasn't obvious or predictable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. Now, in terms of the stereo mixes. Uh-huh. I mean, again, have you had a chance to really listen to them?
You know, not to the extent that I'd like to. I mean, we saw it on your TV, and I've heard it off my computer. I really need to hear it through some proper big speakers. I don't have any real quibbles to speak of. I mean, there was a few things I thought that, you know, it was clear that with double-tracked vocals, they spread them to both channels, yeah, like a bigger sound.
Yeah.
That's different, and that's, yes, cool. I like that.
I like that. I mean, I know some people, I don't know about you, quite like the effect of hearing, you know, for instance, I mean, it's not that it's part of this collection, but that stereo where the vocals are coming out of one channel.
That's horrible.
You know, like Nowhere Man, you know. I never liked that. Just completely ludicrous.
Yeah, I mean, the Rubber Soul album is ruined, you know, things, yeah, like In My Life and, yeah, Girl with that separation.
Well, George Martin said to me, I've mentioned this on a previous show, that it was once the Beatles went home, usually, that they would do the stereo mixes in about half an hour on, you know, each one sort of thing.
Yeah.
Just get it done, and it sounds like
to
that.
To a point, but it was like, kind of like, who were they aiming at with this? Who wants to hear things that
but
way?
But again, what's gone on with these stereo mixes are, if you listen to a lot of them, there are new elements in there.
Yeah, and also the fact is, while they didn't go back to the multi-track masters and remix everything, as I'd kind of been led to believe in advance, they compress things a bit to where vocals that might have been in the stereo spectrum to one side, they kind of merged into the middle a bit, as well as some other elements,
yeah,
to give you a better than what previously existed listening experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Giles Martin in his interviews has talked about wanting to immerse the listener in the Beatles as if they were surrounded by them.
Yeah.
So I get his intents. He lived up to that. You know, this isn't Beatles Love.
No.
And it's not a Yellow Submarine song track. So your approach is going to be different with what you're trying to fulfill as going to be the listener experience for these things. So I think they did what they set out to do, and you can, you know, until they go back to those multi-tracks and remix everything properly, you know, this is what we're going to get, and it's an improvement. I'll take it.
Let's just listen as an example. I know a lot of people have been talking about the intro to Paperback Writer, which does pop.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting. Let's just do an A-B of, let's say, the 2009 mix and the 2015.
And the mono mix.
Paperback Writer!
I still am partial to the mono.
Really?
I get where the new mix has it, a little bit of breathing room to it and some space. I like that.
I do.
I don't know that it has the same punch.
I think because they've widened the sound, basically, and it's a fatter sound. I love it. I think it works for
me. It's a minor thing to me. It's like, it's just a matter of taste and preference.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, I have to agree, you know, when you say it's a minor thing. Ultimately, it's nice. Some people were just raving about, you know, these new mixes, which is great. That's fine. But for me, ultimately, you know, I can listen to the different versions.
Choice is good.
Yeah. And it still comes back to the original material and the performances,
right,
you know. And so people can get really hung up on, you know, the sonic quality, but it's not really where I go. And I know someone who shares that opinion is the person who was watching the videos with us and listening to some of the stereo mixes.
Yes.
Mr. Mark Lewison.
It is better than any collection of videos I ever expected them to release. And well worth the wait.
Any notable omissions for you?
I haven't thought about it in an abstract form. I've just thought about what is there. And I'm really happy with what's on there. There will always be things that could have been added. I'm not dwelling on that. I'm just looking at what is there, because we've got the rest of it anyway. It's not as if what they don't give us, we don't have. It's just a question of quality.
and what they've done is give us best quality in pretty much everything that's on there. No, everything, in fact, everything.
Everything, including the Paul and Ringo interviews?
Well, we've never seen them before, so they are on here in best quality, yes.
What did you think of them?
They don't work. They're not good enough, and I'm disappointed with them. They lack drastically, but whatever. It would have been fine by me if they didn't have that stuff on there, to be honest. Since those things don't add anything, except a certain comical value, to me, I would have been happy to have it without that, because they don't materially add anything. Mm. But, you know, it's fine. They can be on there, and I just won't look at them.
Right. Right.
I don't mind content because these days no one's forcing you to watch all of it, so you just choose the bits you like.
Hmm. What did you think of the packaging and the sort of, you know, the production pieces in there, the graphics?
Oh, I like all that. I think they've done a nice little job animating the titles of things. And, yeah, I was really pleased to see all of that. I think that Apple consistently put out high-quality material. And I think they're doing a good job.
Mm.
And I'm not just saying that because I know the people there, and I'm certainly not doing it to angle for work, because I wouldn't. I just genuinely think that what Apple put out is very good.
What were the standouts for you in the video collection? I mean, obviously you're familiar with most of what we saw.
Familiar with all of them. Yeah. Well, except for the brand new ones, which I really enjoyed.
Right.
In fact, the 8 days a week film, which they've put to great, beautiful Shea Stadium footage, was a real standout, although that's only because I hadn't seen it ever before.
Mm.
All the Beatles videos have value in them. And obviously the ones where they really did have the original, I don't know if they had negatives, but certainly original film prints to restore, like Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields and A Day in the Life. Well, it's like someone who's had a cataract operation on their eyes and suddenly they can see things without the fog. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's like, especially, well, Day in the Life may be 16mm, but it looks like the stuff that was colour 35mm really
jumped
into a whole
35, yeah, I said 16 because it was the number that came into my head, but whatever those original film mediums were, those that Apple actually had kept, because they didn't have all of this stuff, they've been sourcing it, and then working with the best possible sources. Mm. I think they've done a brilliant job. A brilliant job. Three cheers to Apple for this, and for Love, and for Magical Mystery Tour, and for Let It Be Naked, and other projects that aren't leaping instantly to mind. They've all been good, and next year's Ron Howard film will also be a standout.
Your views on the remixes, and your views towards remixes in general?
I haven't really followed. I haven't listened to these remixes properly yet, with headphones and so on. But though that is true, I also may not do that. I probably will in time, but I don't get that turned on by new mixes. I'm very pleased that they've been done, and obviously if it enables you to hear new things or hear things in a good balance, then I'm all for it. I've got no problem with it, but remixes don't float my boat.
Mm.
I'd far rather have an interesting piece of paper than a new remix.
Mm. Anything you would like to see them release that they haven't issued yet or reissued?
I think in time Apple could put everything out, but...
is there anything that you yourself, though, would absolutely love to have them put out?
All the spoken word material.
Mm.
In a series of spoken word albums on a revived Zapple label. That's what I would like to see.
Well, that'd be a huge collection.
Well, Zapple always was meant to be spoken word. And I think they could do it. The material is out there. Whether or not they own the masters, it doesn't matter, because it's all their material anyway.
Mm.
They could grab it from the best source, whatever that might be. It wouldn't be a huge amount of sales, but it wouldn't be a huge amount of cost either, and it could just be done in some clever way.
Released digitally, maybe.
Yeah, anything's possible.
Yeah.
I'm not clamoring for anything, because... You know, I'm sated with what we have, and when they're ready, whatever we get will be good.
What about, I mean, again, it's not something you need to see right now in terms of your writing, but, you know, something that, you know, a lot of people have been clamouring for is a totally recut Let It Be.
Well, that's been in the works for a very long time. I did the interviews for the bonus, you know, the DVD interviews, if you like,
yeah,
with Neil Aspinall and Michael Lindsay-Hogg, and we had the policeman. I tracked down the policeman who went into Savile Row. Yes, yes. We got them back to Savile Row and filmed them there. I went on the roof with Neil Aspinall and all that. That's all 2002, as far as I remember. So that's a long time ago. Mm. Just as well they did it then, because not everyone's with us anymore. Mm. So it's been in the works for a very long time. I'm not privy to why it's being... Not why it's being held up. Maybe it isn't being held up, but I'm not privy to why it hasn't appeared yet. Maybe if I ask the question, they might tell me the answer, but I don't need to ask them the question. When they're ready, when all the interested parties who need to approve these things have done that, we'll get it.
Mm.
But I'm not clamouring for it. I mean, we do know the film. Obviously, there'll be some great bonus material with it, and that will be new to us, and I can't wait to see it, but I will wait.
Well, it's interesting. He went off on that Let It Be tangent.
Mm.
I mean, that's a whole other show unto itself. We can talk about
the
problems with Let It Be.
Yeah.
It will be a show, actually.
Well,
Speaking of, that
would be actually a tremendous release. There's no two ways about it. I mean, he said he's like, you know, he'd love to see the new footage. I mean, I would just die to see it.
You mean the unseen stuff?
Yeah.
Well, sure. But you know what? In the time since... You know, 2002, he was up on the roof of Apple, and whenever Let It Be Naked came out, you know,
2003.
Yeah, you know, it's solid 10 years. There's more you can do, because I think that as time goes by, people are a little bit more open to editorially presenting what there is without this, you know, air of sacredness about, oh, we can't show that or we can't talk about that.
Right.
Certainly more than it would have been 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of Let It Be, I mean, I think we both made the same observation. People watching these promos, folks, you'll notice the sonic differences in the promos for Let It Be and Long and Winding Road.
Yeah.
But did you also notice they have the same exact end seconds on them? The last shot you see is the same in both.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Really, yeah. I know it's the bit where Paul's at the piano. The camera pulls out. You see a guy with a mustache.
The guy who's not Michael Lindsay-Hogg comes and leans on the piano.
Right. Yes.
It's just like, it's almost like an inside joke, because in the Let It Be film, as it exists, there's two different, completely different songs. I think one of them is I Got a Feeling. I can't remember what the other one is.
Mm.
Where they tack on the same exact ending.
Yeah.
The audio to the same exact ending.
Yeah.
I mean, so many problems I have with that film. But anyway, we're getting off course here from Beatles One discussion.
Mm.
Some of the things that, you know, and Mark didn't want to get into that, how did he put it? He wasn't thinking abstract about, you know, what was missing. And I'm not saying this to complain, but I will say it's a little surprising to me that with the Apple DVDs that have come out, including Magical Mystery Tour and Yellow Submarine in recent years, that there's no Easter eggs in this one.
I know. And when I interviewed Eric, I asked him, you know, before he had the finished product in his hand.
Right.
And I said, will there be any Easter eggs? And he was definitive. He said no.
As if the decision had already been made.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't understand why, because I can see.
We could have had those extra, you know, the extra We Can Work It Out, couldn't we?
We could have had that if you wanted to see 3-4 versions of that. I would have been very happy to see the Dartless version of Help.
Right.
That would have been superb. It exists. It used to be on YouTube.
Yeah.
They could have bolstered George's contribution by putting in that freestanding promo for For You Blue that exists.
Yeah,
it's a different cut than the lift from the film.
Yeah,
that could have been there. You know, apart from the better versions of things like, you know, a better representation for Come Together. They've got I Want to Hold Your Hand. Why not This Boy from the same show?
Yeah, yeah,
that would be great. It was a single. It was a B-side.
See, what this confirms is some people are never happy.
No, some people are thinking critically and are intellectually honest enough to present the bad along with the good.
Intellectually or emotionally honest enough?
Both. You know, emotional intelligence counts for something in this world, Richard. I know they've kept that from you these years, but trust me, the whispers.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes. A lack of facetiousness also counts for something.
Net plus in every way for this thing.
Hmm.
But we wouldn't be honest if we couldn't say, well, and point out a few things
that. Of course, I'm just having a go at you. I agree with you on all of this stuff, but you know, I just can't admit it. But,
okay.
Yeah.
So then, why don't we close out with one of the sonic improvements that's gotten a lot of chatter, the 8 days a week?
Yeah, fantastic.
It's different.
It is. It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, I've always loved that song because it does, like I Feel Fine, it really, for me, captures the Beatles at a kind of one of many peaks, obviously, but it is Beatlemania for me. It's got the sound of the excitement of Beatlemania, and how fantastic that we've got a wonderful new video, which I really didn't expect. That kind of blindsided me in all the best ways. And sonically, as you say, it's also one of the standout new mixes.
Yes. Takes you back to college, does it?
Takes me back to 1964.
Mm.
Yeah.
As I said. This has been Robert Rodriguez.
And this has been Richard Buskin.
You're listening to
Something About the Beatles.
Something About the Beatles, recorded at Strad Studios, produced by Thomas Rapetney, executive producer Rick Wedd.